And we are reading this morning from Daniel chapter 1, verse 1. If you have a pew Bible, chair Bible, it's page 883. Daniel 1, verse 1. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord delivered Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, along with some of the articles from the temple of God. These he carried off to the temple of his God in Babylonia and put in the treasure house of his God. Then the king ordered Ashpenaz, chief of his court officials, to bring into the king's service some of the Israelites from the royal family and the nobility, young men without any physical defect, handsome, showing aptitude for every kind of learning, well-informed, quick to understand, and qualified to serve in the king's palace. He was to teach them the language and literature of the Babylonians. The king assigned them a daily amount of food and wine from the king's table. They were to be trained for 3 years, and after that they were to enter the king's service. Among those who were chosen were some from Judah: Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. The chief official gave them new names: to Daniel, the name Belteshazzar; to Hananiah, Shadrach; to Mishael, Meshach; and to Azariah, Abednego. But Daniel resolved not to defile himself with the royal food and wine, and he asked the chief official for permission not to defile himself in this way. Now God had caused the official to show favor and compassion to Daniel. But the official told Daniel, "I am afraid of my lord the king, who was assigned your food and drink. Why should he see you looking worse than the other young men of your age? The king would then have my head because of you." Daniel then said to the guard, whom the chief official had appointed over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, "Please test your servants for 10 days. Give us nothing but vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then compare our appearance with that of the young men who eat the royal food, and treat your servants in accordance with what you see." So he agreed to this and tested them for 10 days. At the end of the 10 days, they looked healthier and better nourished than any of the young men who ate the royal food. So the guard took away their choice food and the wine they were to drink and gave them vegetables instead. To these four young men, God gave knowledge and understanding of all kinds of literature and learning, and Daniel could understand visions and dreams of all kinds. At the end of the time set by the king to bring them into his service, the chief official presented them to Nebuchadnezzar. The king talked with them, and he found none equal to Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. So they entered the king's service. In every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king questioned them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and enchanters in his whole kingdom. And Daniel remained there until the first year of King Cyrus. This is the word of the Lord.
Thank you very much indeed, Vaughan. Well, as Helen said, we're starting our series in Daniel. If I could have... There we are, it is. Fantastic. Brilliant. And I'm going to just start with a few reflections on this book that we're about to explore together. If you've been at St Mary's over the summer, you'll know that we've done the whole of the Bible story in 17 words. And if I were to ask you and we had time, I know you'd all be able to recite them exactly in order from memory. You might not. Some of you might. But one of them was exile. Do you remember in the middle of the story, we looked at that period of exile where the prophets and the judges and the kings had been calling God's people back to God. But again and again and again, the people of God had said, "No, we'll do things our way instead of God's way." And the prophets in particular in the Old Testament cry out to the people, "If you keep on in this way, if you keep rejecting God, then you will not enjoy his covenant security in your land." And the people continue to rebel, and eventually both the northern kingdom and then eventually the southern kingdom, is defeated. Jerusalem is defeated by the Babylonians, and many people are taken into exile in Babylon, where they sat down and wept and sang songs by Boney M, if you remember, if you were here in that week. And so we're going back to the story. Last week, we finished that whole series by saying, this is our story. The Bible story, the importance of recognizing the whole Bible story is that it's the story we are part of. It gives us our identity in our relationship with God. It feeds us and nourishes us. It reminds us of where we've come from, but also of where we're going. And that's true of the Old Testament as well as the New Testament. A few things about Daniel. First is to say that it's a very complex book. It's a complicated book. Scholars have huge debates about all sorts of things, just about everything we're going to experience in Daniel in the next 10 weeks or so. There are arguments about. There are arguments about its historicity. When exactly was it written? Was it written by Daniel in the 6th century BC when Daniel and his colleagues were taken into Babylon in exile? Some people say, yes, it was. Some say, no, it's probably written around the 2nd century, and they base that on some of the things that we read about, but also on the use of language. Daniel's a complicated book, partly because, unusually amongst the Old Testament books, it's half written in Aramaic and half written in Hebrew. And so maybe it was written in the 2nd century, but with reflections and memories and stories that have been passed down from generation to generation before it finally gets into print. I don't think we need to get worried about that. But it's part of the complexity of the book. It's also quite a complex book in where you classify it in the biblical literature. Is it part of the wisdom literature? Places like Proverbs and Psalms. Well, parts of it that we'll come across read like that. Is it clearly part of the prophecy part of the Old Testament? Is it a prophet? Well, yes, there are prophecies in there. There are things that God speaks through Daniel and others into that speak of the present and the future. But it's not quite as comfortable as some of the other books of prophecy. Is it apocalyptic literature, like Revelation, which just means unveiling? Well, yes, it is. It has a picture. It's complicated. It reads like a dream in parts, a bit like parts of Revelation. So it's quite a complicated book. I don't want us to get too worried about that, though. It is scripture. It is, for the last 2,000 years, the church has said there's something about this book being part of the canon of Scripture, which means that God uses it to breathe his word into our lives today, even through this ancient text. I personally think that sometimes when we find a book is quite complicated, I find it quite helpful to think we don't have to resolve all those issues. I think it's really exciting that God used complex and sometimes ambiguous literature, sometimes that seems to contradict each other, to speak to us. Because for me, it has something of the mark of real life about it. And that's one of the main things I want to say this morning, that Daniel is a book for real life today. It's a living story. It's a story with all sorts of different characters involved. Some of them will be familiar today. It's a story of refugees. As we listen to the news, we can perhaps think back to that same part of the world as from where many of the current refugees are coming. Daniel is a refugee. He is plucked from his home with no choice and taken to a land. There's warfare. There's violence. It's a story of tyrants who will behead someone if they say the wrong thing or do the wrong thing. People of absolute power. It's a story of fear. There's plenty of fear going on in the book of Daniel. It's a story of vulnerability. I wonder whether you've seen, I'm going to show you a very short clip of this, I'm mindful of time, whether you've seen this video clip that is doing the rounds on Facebook. It's absolutely amazing. If it works, you might have to take my word for it. Oh, there we are. And it goes on for quite a long time. Is that mind-boggling? Why would you do that? That's vulnerability. One wrong move and you're dead. That's actually the situation that Daniel finds himself in this story. One wrong move, and you're being eaten by lions, or perhaps not, as we'll find out later, thrown in a furnace. However the king decides he wants to get rid of you. It's a story of vulnerability. It's a story with mixed spirituality, all sorts of pagan religions and spiritualities and mysticism going on in the place that Daniel has been taken. And it's a story, I think, full of tension. So I believe that Daniel is a great story for us today. If you, in the coming week, will come across stories of refugees, if you will meet tyrants, maybe who won't chop off your head, but who might be bullies. Maybe some of you have got a boss who you feel is a tyrant. If you will face fears in the week ahead, if you feel vulnerable, one wrong move and everything comes crushing down. If you feel that you're struggling with the mixture of spirituality and different views in the place you spend your week, if you live with tension, then I think Daniel's a great book for us to be looking at. I want this morning simply to start the story off, really, by thinking about two tensions that Daniel has to live with. Two tensions that I think most of us have to live with. The first tension is this. It's a story of uncompromise. Did you read here, when Vaughan read it, how Daniel, even though he's been brought into the king's service, has decided that he's not going to disobey the Jewish laws when it comes to food. At least that's what we assume is behind his refusal to eat meat and drink the wine. Probably because it may have included all sorts of things that Jews were prohibited from eating. Probably because it had already been sacrificed to idols. There may have been a number of reasons. But Daniel decides that it's time for him to be uncompromising. And if you've heard anyone preach on Daniel before, you'll know that that's probably one of the main themes that flows through the whole story. We're called to be distinctive as the people of God. But the more I've been looking at this passage this week, something struck me. This is a story of uncompromising compromise. Because when you think about it, Daniel doesn't seem to argue against being taken into the king's residences, being presumably clothed in Babylonian clothes. He's given a new name. I don't know whether he has any choice about that. He's taught new languages, which he seems to learn, him and his friends. And eventually they end up in the king's service. This is the king of Babylon, who has destroyed Jerusalem, murdered many of their relatives, and taken them away from the promised land. You might have thought Daniel would go on hunger strike. But no, he actually, it seems to me, rides quite a narrow ledge. He gives in to quite a lot of things, but on certain things, and we'll see this again and again and again, in certain things he says, no, this is where I have to make a stand. Interesting, isn't it? It's full of compromise, perhaps a little bit hidden, but it's also a story of uncompromising loyalty to God. To put it another way, I would say that Daniel's a story of integration and distinctiveness, somehow in the difficult mix blended together. And I would suggest that as Christians, that's part of our calling, integration and distinctiveness. Some parts of the Christian church, I think, have so stressed integration that we've lost distinctiveness. But some parts maybe have stressed so much distinctiveness that we've lost something of the integration that God calls us to. Daniel has scripture behind him. He has letters and things he can read that bring that tension out into the open. He's got the law of the Old Testament. These are distinctive things that Jewish people must abide by. And then we looked at this earlier in the year, over the summer period, this letter arrives to those in Babylon from Jeremiah, who's still in Jerusalem. Jeremiah 29. And this is what we read. This is what the Lord Almighty, the God of Israel, says to all those I carried into exile from Jerusalem to Babylon, brackets including Daniel. Build houses and settle down. Plant gardens and eat what they produce. Marry and have sons and daughters. Find wives for your sons and give your daughters in marriage so that they too may have sons and daughters. Increase in number there. Do not decrease. Also seek peace, the peace and prosperity of the city to which I have carried you into exile. Pray to the Lord for it, because if it prospers, you too will prosper. And I suspect Daniel, if he reads that, is in a bit of a quandary. What does it mean to be completely distinctive, to be set apart for God? That's what the word holy comes from. And yet, to seek the peace and prosperity and the good of the community that God is asking me to get integrated into. It's a difficulty. It's a difficulty that we face if we are Christians and we live in a world that isn't entirely Christian. Anybody recognize that scenario? I wonder whether you have come across this little phrase. We're called to be in the world but not of the world. Hands up if you've come across that. Maybe a lot of you have. And maybe you found that quite a helpful little way of thinking, well, yes, we're meant to be in the world, but we mustn't be tainted by it. We're not of it. I want to suggest that there's some truth in that. But actually, in the big picture, God has a slightly different slant on that. That phrase comes from Jesus talking to his disciples, praying, in fact, to God about his disciples, about his followers in John 17. I've given them your word, and the world has hated them. For they are not of the world, that's the of the world bit, any more than I am of the world. My prayer is not that you take them out of the world, though, says Jesus, because they're in it, but that you protect them from the evil one. They're not of the world as I am not of it. Sanctify them by the truth. Your word is truth. As you have sent me into the world, I have sent them into the world. I want to suggest maybe a better phrase for us as we think about our workplaces, our communities, the places we live, is maybe that God is calling us to be in the world but not of the world, but sent into the world. That's the feeling I get about Daniel in Babylon. God has sent him into Babylon for a purpose. God has placed you in wherever you live, in your community, in your friendship groups, in your workplaces, amongst people who don't yet know Jesus, for a purpose. And one of the challenges of the Christian faith, the Christian life today, is one of the challenges Daniel faces. It's very easy to fall into the temptation, and again, a lot of churches do this, to think that our job is just to keep our heads down and hide until Jesus comes again. And that's not the picture the Bible paints at all. An image that I've used before. Sometimes I think that churches too often feel as if, just imagine you're on a big cruise liner and you're worried it might sink one day. So what do you do? Well, the safest place to do is to live in the lifeboat. And you get in the lifeboat and you persuade as many friends as you can to come into the lifeboat. You pull the tarpaulin down and you say, "We'll be all right when the end comes." And just occasionally someone in there says, "Well, we ought to be reaching out to others on the cruise ship." So we pull back the tarpaulin, we watch a passerby go, "Psst, come and join us, it's going to sink." And we pull the tarpaulin down. And that's the sort of mindset we can get into as a church, as Christians. But I don't think that's what Jesus has in mind. He says we're meant to be in and into the cruise ship, down even on the bingo hall, changing the atmosphere. Why? Because the ship isn't going to sink. It's going to be recreated when Jesus comes again. And he's going to be on the bridge. And part of our challenge as a community of faith is to be integrated and, yes, distinctive at times, but not to run away and think that God has given up on the world. Trying to live like that requires courage and it requires wisdom. It requires both courage and it requires great wisdom. And we'll see that as Daniel goes on. We'll see through the story of Daniel that there are times when Daniel is called by God to make a stand. And there will be times, I think, if we're going to be faithful to Jesus Christ, when we're called to make a stand. But there will be other times when we're called to be integrated into the communities. And one of the things that I think we need to challenge ourselves about sometimes is not judging other people on where they take a stand and when they're integrated. I was at college with a pastor from the official church in China, and there's a lot of debate at the moment. You may know that in China there's both the official church and the unofficial underground church, and the number of books that really are very negative about the official church. I can tell you that this pastor was one of the most godly, committed Christians I've come across. And God has placed him as a pastor in the official church. We need to be very careful that we don't look at other people and think, well, you're not taking a stand on this issue when you should be. The question will be, what's God calling you to be distinctive about? And where is he calling you to get integrated, to be amongst those who maybe are involved in things that we might want to be distinctive about, but in order to change the atmosphere? And as Christians, I think we need to make sure that we're not in our lifeboats, but we're in the community, in the world that God has called us to. I had another half to my sermon, but time's run away, so I'll maybe tell you that another time, or you can come around and have a beer. I was going to just talk a little bit about, well, I'll just mention it. One of the other questions that comes up again and again in Daniel and in the Old Testament is this other tension that exists between the sovereignty of God and the reality on the ground. In the Old Testament, the sovereignty of God sort of trumps everything. So the worldview of the Old Testament, without much room for things like the devil and evil coming from other sources, is if something goes wrong, God has willed it. And so in this story, we read about God taking the people from Judah into Babylon, including taking things from the temple into the worship of the pagan gods. And that's just a mindset that says, well, if it's gone wrong, it must be God. One of the tensions we live with, I think, in the New Testament, in view of the New Testament, is that Jesus often says to his disciples, it's not that simple. That, yes, there is a sense, perhaps, in which God is still sovereign, and for some reason, things go wrong. But it might not be that God has deliberately caused them, but that somehow he allows them because of other factors, because he's so committed to free will, because there is evil in our world that doesn't find its source in God. And that's another tension that we need to live with as we seek to be both integrated and distinctive as the people of God. How do we do that? Well, we do that by, I think, living with integrity, by being aware of some of the tensions that we'll face. We do that by asking questions about where our ultimate security lies. One of the things we'll find again and again and again, that Daniel realizes, though he is both integrated and distinctive, his ultimate security is not in Babylon, and it's not even in Judah. It's in relationship with his creator. And we'll live with some of that tension over God's sovereignty and the unanswerable questions that it brings today, by asking questions about where our ultimate security lies. Is it founded on the rock of Jesus Christ? If it is, that's the best place to live in tension. We're going to move towards communion. I think we're going to risk the wrath of the Sunday school teachers by singing before we do so, because I'd like us just to sing about the foundation of our lives. I want us to know that as we look at Daniel, God knows that we live in places of tension, and he wants to be there with us and in it with us, and invite us to be both distinctive and integrated.